perched on the edge of the Pacific, Vladivostok, with its rolling hills and iconic bridges, is in many ways reminiscent of San Francisco. But as Russia's most Asian city, it has a distinct and vibrant culture all of its own. So let's dive in. Cities, street art can be seen as an act of rebellion. But here in Vladivostok, though, it's all above board. The walls here tell both age-old and contemporary stories, all in beautifully vivid colours. Pavel, these murals, they really brighten up the city. They're public, free to view, you can't buy or insure them. Would you almost say that they're the purest form of art for art's sake?
No, I don't agree. You probably can't really buy this, but you can commission it, and that's usually how it works. In this case, it's all an official commission for a specific image. But the main judges here are the people. There have been cases when residents said, no, this all needs to be painted over. It has to go. And honestly, that makes sense. It is a public space. It belongs to the people. In a gallery, you walk in like it's a temple of art, and you're expected to listen to the artist. But here, it's different. People actually live here. And if they don't like something, they'll say so. We don't like it, remove it immediately.
And how does that make you feel?
Look, we're fine with that. We as urban artists, I mean, is just part of the job. In fact, everything happens for the sake of that dialogue. We're not painting just to decorate the city for entertainment purposes. We want a conversation with residents. We create an image and then get feedback. Do they like it or not? Did it land or not? When we get a wow effect, that's great. But if we don't, that's good too. It's still an experience. It helps us understand that maybe this particular theme isn't something to bring up right now.
And how do these murals reflect Vladivostok's identity as a city? What are the main themes that shine through?
You might laugh, but this year we painted 10 large tigers. The tiger has basically become our main mural character. Besides that, we often depict marine life. Dolphins, sea cucumbers, octopuses, and so on. And we also include pieces of history, figures who lived here, who were present, who left their mark. Things like that.
Well, should we take a closer look at one of your works?
Yes, let's go.
Superb. Milionka Quarter now, right in the heart of Vladivostok. What does this mural tell us about life here, Pavel?
This is one of the most popular murals in our city. It features all the 19th century characters who are here in this location. This was actually the first Chinatown in Russia, a separate district. Even the Russian police were afraid to go in. It had its own authorities, its own king. We depicted him down here, see? He's sitting on Kolchak's gold, because there are legends about that. Various characters are shown here, all based on historical photographs.
Right.
Russian sailors, foreign sailors, Chinese, Koreans, geishas, rats, water carriers, and so on. What made this district so fascinating was how incredibly diverse it was. Very colorful, very interesting. They even say people would disappear here without a trace.
Well, as you've said, they're so varied and so vivid. Did you have to do some research and look at archives of photographs to represent them accurately here?
My creative method is to do a lot of preparatory work. I believe a painting isn't just about the artist's expression or authorship. It's very important to maintain historical accuracy. That is why I'm really into local history and research. I also worked with a community of local historians who helped me choose the characters and the various attributes they're holding.
So quite a lot of work behind the scenes.
Peter, I've actually got an idea I've been working on for a while. I wanted to do a small test run of a new street art project specifically for Melyonka. Want to join in?
I'd be honored to, Pavel. Thank you.
This is an illegal street art project, so we need to move fast. I need your help.
Quickly, yeah?
Hold this.
There we go. Quick look around, make sure no one's come in. Nothing to see here. There we go. What's the art, Pavel?
So, murals are officially approved works, but street art is more like the artist's statement or experiments. Things we don't get approved. It is our own expression in the city. An illegal kind of thing, so everything has to be done quickly.
Do I dare mention Banksy?
This is what he usually does, actually. These projects are great because they give the artist more freedom.
Well, the coast is clear, Pavel.
Looks good. It might seem like there's no one around, Peter, but there are eyes everywhere. This project is for children. It shows historical children. And us as well. When someone bends down, they see their reflection through these kids. It's kind of a message to adults that we were all children once.
And this is a child from, what, 100 years ago?
This is a child from Melyonka, also based on a historical photograph. We'll see how it works. I just want to test how it lives in this environment. Will people tear it down? Will there be any reaction on social media? All right, we need to go.
Well, let's go. This figure behind us, and why is he here?
This depicts an Aleut, indigenous people. The street is called Aleutskaya. But it's not named after the people, it's named after the ship Aleut, one of the first ships whose sailors helped build our city. You can see the ship there, too. And the ship itself was named after the Aleuts. So we depicted an Aleut to spark curiosity, so that people start wondering who that is and feel motivated to learn something new about history.
And is it true that this is Vladivostok's very first street?
That's right. The founding ship arrived over there in the bay. There were two ships, and the sailors from one would visit the other. They wore down paths between them, and those paths eventually became Aleutskaya Street and Svetlanskaya Street, right where they used to walk to visit each other.
And now there's a whole city here.
So that basically became the first urban layout of the city.
Fascinating. This mural is called The Island of Vladivostok. Bit of a simple question. Why? Because Vladivostok isn't an island, it's on the mainland.
This mural is based on a painting by the well-known Vladivostok artist Lydia Kozmina. She's the one who depicted Vladivostok as an island, and that really resonates with how we see ourselves as residents. We're not actually an island, but we still feel isolated, unique, and so far removed from the rest of Russia that it creates a constant sense of living on one.
In this city, cultures meet on the street and combine in the kitchen. And there's no one better to give us a taste of the Far East than the man who put it on the global culinary map.
Roman, if you were to sum up the taste of Vladivostok in one sentence, what would you say?
The taste of Vladivostok is fresh seafood. We're surrounded by the sea, so that's what defines it. Live crabs, live oysters, scallops, blood clams, surf clams, kelp.
So seafood then.
That's right.
And is there a dish that you would say is symbolic of or unique to this city? And more importantly, can I try it?
Scallops are the symbol of Vladivostok. They're widely available, and people eat them as part of their everyday diet. Whenever they head out into the countryside for a picnic, scallops will be on the picnic menu. People eat them fried or raw, straight from the shell. And today, we're going to cook a scallop dish.
Fantastic. And what will this dish be?
Today we're making scallop tataki with coconut yogurt, tomato and yuzu sauce, and some fresh berries.
I'm getting hungry already.
We hold a scallop festival every year. It started off as a regional event, but for more than 5 years now, it has become a national festival, taking place in Moscow and St. Petersburg as well. So now it spans the entire country, from Vladivostok to St. Petersburg. It's organized by Zuma Restaurant. As part of the festival, we always create three new scallop dishes and serve them with shells for decoration. What we're making now is one of the dishes I presented at the festival this year, scallops with coconut yogurt. For that, we need some fresh local scallops.
And what other ingredients do we have here?
Scallops, then some coconut yogurt. The coconut yogurt is made from coconut cream, which is fermented in advance. We start with fresh scallops, and now we're giving them a quick tataki-style sear.
How do you say that Vladivostok's geographical location has influenced the cuisine here? Obviously, you're near the sea, there's lots of seafood, but you're also a stone's throw away from China, South Korea, Japan.
Vladivostok is located in the far east of our vast country, and Asian influence is very strong here. China, Korea, and Japan are right next door. There are huge numbers of Asian restaurants in Vladivostok, Chinese, Japanese, and Korean, including both North and South Korean places. We have spices from every corner of Asia, so Vladivostok has a distinct Asian flavor to it. You can taste Asian spices in every dish we cook. We season our seafood with Asian spices too. The scallop dish I'm making right now has yuzu in it. Yuzu is a Japanese fruit similar to tangerines.
Okay. Take a step back.
Now we torch the scallops just a little. Not much.
Mm-hmm. Already smell.
Until they look like this. You can eat it raw, of course, but I like to torch it lightly. It looks better that way.
Mm-hmm. And what does that add to the taste?
It adds a hint of smokiness. Mm-hmm. Right. Now, the sauce. It's made with ripe tomatoes, yuzu juice, and lime juice. It's very delicate.
Is it spicy?
No, it's not spicy. It just has this gentle acidity. The yuzu and lime give it the citrus twist because scallops are naturally sweet. So the scallops are sweet, the sauce is slightly sour, and then we add the coconut yogurt. Each ingredient has its own flavor, but together they create a much more natural, harmonious mix of flavors, and they work beautifully together.
My mouth's watering already.
We've added the sauce, and now let's add the coconut yogurt. It makes the dish creamy. Nothing on the plate is there by chance. Every ingredient complements the others. Right.
If you were to create a cookbook of recipes from Russia's Far East, what would your top recipes be?
I cook fresh scallops, of course, crabs and whelks. Whelks are also our local seafood delicacy, harvested in the Sea of Japan and the Sea of Ohotsk. They're basically sea snails. They are also Black Sea Rapa whelks, which are very similar, just larger. And I'd cook the octopus as well. Definitely octopus, because it's right here in our waters. Almost every restaurant here makes octopus dishes. We have several kinds, like giant Pacific octopus and sand octopus. The giant Pacific octopus is big, weighing up to 20 kilos. It's really huge. That's the one I mostly use, because its flavor is so deep and intense. It's very different from Moroccan, Lebanese, or Iranian octopus. Local octopus has a much richer flavor. It really tastes of the sea. Apart from the sea, I'd cook food sourced from the taiga forest. That's right, local cooking is not just about seafood. We also have fern shoots, wild garlic, pine nuts, and wild honey. Every year we hold food festivals that highlight and celebrate our culture. And there we are, the first dish is ready. Scallops with coconut yogurt and tomato and yuzu sauce. You absolutely need to try it with both the sauce and the yogurt. That's where the flavor is. You have to try it all together. So you have the sweet taste of the scallops, the slightly sour sauce, and the creamy yogurt. That's the harmony you want, all three flavors together.
And they're ingredients that you wouldn't normally think to put together, but they do work. Delicious, thank you very much. Is it true that in Vladivostok there are lots of ingredients like scallops that would be considered, say, delicacies in Europe and often feature in Michelin restaurants, but here they're quite commonplace?
For us, scallops are everyday food. Maybe we don't eat them literally every day, but very often. Mm-hmm. Whenever we go to the coast or out on a picnic, we grill them over charcoal. We eat scallops all the time.
Should we make the second dish?
The next ingredient that's also very popular in the Far East is the crab. We're going to make a section of a crab leg with seared nectarines and some cheese sauce.
I'm glad that I left some space.
So here's the section of a crab leg. It's already been seared in butter.
Delicious.
The nectarines, since they're in season right now, have been seared with some thyme, salt, pepper, and some bold Asian spices. And of course, we'll use some salmon roe. How could we do without roe? So again, it's all local. Right, the sauce.
How much is the sauce?
This is the cheese sauce made with cream and two types of cheese, some unripened cheese and some camembert cheese, to give the sauce a little tang.
So apart from the seafood here, Roman, what other ingredients are common in the cuisine here in Vladivostok?
First of all, we use a lot of Asian spices, even in European cuisine restaurants. Vladivostok is a young city with a strong Asian influence. I'd probably call our concept Russian Pan-Asian cuisine. Russian Pan-Asian means that we use our local ingredients and traditional Asian cooking recipes and techniques. So that's probably the best way to describe it. Russian Pan-Asian food with lots of spices. And then let's not forget about the taiga forest. The forest supplies us with lots of ingredients such as wild garlic, fern shoots, pine nuts, and wild honey. It also gives us a lot of game. The taiga is vast. We have plenty of roe deer, red deer, and wild boar. It's an incredibly rich region with an abundance of seafood and vast expanses of taiga. That's why our cuisine is a blend of seafood and forest food.
So tell me, what do tourists, Asian tourists who come from Beijing, Tokyo, Seoul, what do they think when they come to Vladivostok and they try Russian-style Asian cuisine or Asian cuisine in a Russian style?
They're very surprised. Yes, they're very surprised because when they come here, it feels a little like coming home. They come to try our Far Eastern cuisine and seafood, and then they discover that we use the same spices they do. They really enjoy that.
Yeah.
It feels like a whole new take on Asian culture.
Awesome. Some juicy chunks of crab.
And of course, we need plenty of roe.
And is the cheese used in the sauce Russian?
Yes, of course. Both kinds of cheese are from local farmers.
And made locally.
Almost everything here is local now.
And is the second dish ready now?
Just a second. Uno momento.
It's very colorful.
So?
Wow. I mean,
crab nectarines, cheese sauce, and roe.
It looks so beautiful, I don't want to spoil it.
Try it, you have to try it.
Okay.
It's important to get some crab, roe, and nectarines all together on the fork. That really matters, the sweet crab and the sweet and salty nectarines and the salty roe.
So we have crab, caviar.
More.
Okay. More, sorry. Okay, wow, there we go. Nectarine, sauce, right. Excuse me. Also a really fascinating combination of flavors.
Yes, but what's really important is that there are only a few ingredients, just three, nectarines, crab, and caviar, and the sauce that ties everything together. You've got three different flavors that complement each other, sweetness, acidity, and a hint of bitterness.
Can I have some more?
You should.
Where the Pacific begins. Lighthouses have guided ships through Vladivostok's fog and storms for more than a century. They're more than just navigational tools, they're symbols of the city itself.
Kostya, this is one of the oldest lighthouses in the whole of Primorye. Exactly how old is it?
Yes, that's right, but only partly. This lighthouse is indeed old, but it's not the oldest. It's still quite respectable in age, over 110 years. It was built in 1910. It was first lit in 1913, when it officially went into operation. And one more important detail, it was built by one of the first whalers in Vladivostok, Otto Lindholm. They say he was fulfilling a childhood dream because there was an identical lighthouse back in his homeland.
Fascinating. I guess because it's such an old lighthouse, it must have seen quite a bit in its day. Are there any local stories or legends about it?
Yeah, there are some really fascinating stories about this place. First of all, this is the best lighthouse to truly experience the sea. Anyone who comes to Vladivostok always comes here eventually. You've got open sea all around, on both sides. It's the perfect place to watch sunrises and sunsets. An amazing vista. In winter, when the ice freezes smooth, locals even go skating here.
Really?
Yes, when the ice is nice and even. Another important thing, every winter, seals come here, our spotted lager seals. They're kind of a local mascot. You can watch them lying on the ice, warming their big bellies, staring at people with their huge eyes. Also, right now, we're walking along a spit. Not many people know this, but back in the 1940s, there used to be a pedestrian bridge here. What you see now are the remains. Metal railheads from railway tracks.
Yes.
By the late 1980s, unfortunately, the bridge was no longer used and became dilapidated. And I recently came across another curious story. This happened in the mid-1980s. It was told by the lighthouse keeper at the time. One evening, he climbed up to the lantern room to check if everything was working. Suddenly, he sees a massive landing ship coming straight towards the lighthouse from the direction of the Golden Horn Bay. It was heading straight for the lighthouse, and the ship had no lights on, no crew visible, no signals.
Ghost ship.
The Flying Dutchman. Also, its ramp was down. You know, the front ramp they use to unload tanks and armored vehicles.
Terrifying.
So it was just moving straight at the lighthouse. It turned out the lighthouse had completely lost power. All the navigation equipment was silent. And somehow, by sheer luck, some underwater current pushed the ship away from the islet and it ran aground at Cape Larionov instead. That's the story.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we could have lost the lighthouse. Quite an incident.
The vast majority of lighthouses these days are automated, but there are still a few that have a lighthouse keeper. Why and what is their responsibility?
Yes, the lighthouse keeper's responsibilities are huge. The job is very multifunctional. You're everything from an electrician to a mechanic to an engineer. You even have to be a bit of a meteorologist and also know how to cook. You're totally isolated, so you have to be able to keep yourself fed. On top of that, you need to understand radio equipment, know your way around electronic components, basically fix anything that breaks. Of course, keeping the lighthouse operational is your main responsibility. You also have to look after the property, repair things, guard the sites, and keep unauthorized people out. It's a pretty wide range of duties. The number of lighthouses in Primorsky Krai is unfortunately decreasing. As far as I know, there are currently 24 still staffed. It means either a lone keeper or sometimes with family living there, taking care of everything. According to the lighthouse service rules, every family member must know how to switch the light on and off. So it's not just one job. It's a whole system of responsibilities.
Well, as well as all the skills you've just listed, I guess it also takes psychologically a certain type of person, someone who's comfortable in his own company and I guess not scared of some bad weather.
Yes, first and foremost, I'd say one of the key requirements is being prepared to live in isolation. People tend to think of lighthouses as something romantic, but they forget that it's really about isolation and responsibility. You have to be ready to fix anything that goes wrong. There's nowhere to go. You can't just run to a store for spare parts or supplies. You're completely on your own, and you carry a huge amount of responsibility. Of course, there are people who choose this kind of life to get away from society. But that doesn't really apply to this particular lighthouse. The Tokarevsky lighthouse is actually a big attraction. People come here every day, in any weather. But to be a lighthouse keeper, you definitely need to be a certain type of personality. You need to be comfortable with isolation and be able to take responsibility in a remote place. It becomes your home, your job, and your whole life all at once.
This might be a bit of a simple question, but what happens if the bulb goes? What sort of backup systems do they have?
Even though a lighthouse, from an engineering standpoint, is not the most complex thing to manage, things still go wrong. A light bulb can burn out, but there's always a backup light. Tokarevsky Lighthouse has one too. And if a lighthouse is staffed, the keeper has to come out in any weather, including storms, and fix whatever's broken. That's part of the job. And even though lighthouses are now automated, every ship has modern navigation systems anyway.
Well, Kostya, thanks so much for telling me all about the lighthouses here in Primorje. I think we'll have to come back in winter to see the seals.
Sure, of course. All the best, and thank you.